In the name of the God who creates in us, the Christ who lives through us, and the Spirit who inspires us. Amen. Biscuits, cornbread, tortillas, pita, baguettes, naan, Parker House rolls, crumpets and scones, ciabatta, pumpernickel loaf, sesame seed bagels, caraway sea salt lavash, chocolate cinnamon babka, Bambinelli's garlic twist, and those Cheddar Bay biscuits from the Red Lobster that we all know we really secretly love. Are you salivating yet? Now that I have your attention, or your stomach's attention, let's talk some more about bread. We have arrived at week 3, the midpoint in our 5-week exploration of what is known as the Bread of Life discourses in John's Gospel. And it's starting to feel like, as we say when we go out, I may be filling up on the bread. For a moment, I was tempted to start looking for the gluten-free option on the lectionary menu this week. But it only took one trip out to eat to remind me how central bread is to who we really are. This past Friday, Amanda and I went out for what we call one of our few and far between date lunches. We went to one of our favorite places to dine and were looking forward to these really yummy little rolls that they normally have, that they bring to the table on a plate covered in melted butter and garlic. But instead, there arrived a basket containing a starched black napkin with two very thin slices of French bread and some whipped butter that had been extruded through a pastry bag into a ramekin. We were a bit disappointed, but we gobbled it up and asked for more. It seems no matter how much we are looking forward to our favorite appetizer, salad, entree, fish course, if you're in a fancy restaurant, dessert, there's something about that bread when it gets to the table that is irresistible. It's like the bridge that's going to get you to the rest of the meal. When the wait person lowers it to the table, it is like, oh, well, manna from heaven. I looked around after we had scarfed ours down and while we were waiting for the second napkinful to arrive and noticed how great bread is as an equalizer. Across from us, 4 retired women of leisure were playing cards as they ate their bread and waited for their food. The couple seated next to us was in snappy business attire, sharing the same bread. A mother and daughter were catching up over quiche at the table on the left while enjoying the same bread. Bread extends across time and topography as one of the most ubiquitous of foods, common, cheap, imminently available, and yet to test bread's value, one only need hear the words from the television, snow. And all bread magically disappears. It is something we pay little attention to until we think we may not be able to get it, and then it becomes invaluable. And John's Jesus seems to be aware of this when he chooses this as his primary metaphor. Jesus begins today by restating the closing sentence of last week's lection. I am the bread of life. Whoever comes to me will never be hungry, and whoever believes in me will never be thirsty. We then, as we're prone to do, skip over a few verses, and we arrive at the Jews' response to Jesus' declaration. Now, remember with me, especially in John's Gospel, that the Jews are not a group apart from the followers of Jesus. Jesus was a Jew. Jesus' disciples were a Jew. These folk John refers to are more accurately described as those who have traditionally been known to be the faithful followers of Yahweh. They are the faithful. Read that into the text if you want. Read yourselves into the text. Sometimes we are the Jews. Sometimes we are the disciples. Sometimes we are the ones that are not getting the message or are challenging the message. They are confused. Some might even say that they are distressed that this Jesus is coming to them and talking to them about a new way of being in relationship with God. They remember the manna in the wilderness and were thankful that it sustained their ancestors. Some of them, no doubt, even enjoyed a refreshing repast of bread and fish a few days earlier on the mountainside when Jesus fed the multitude. But they are unsure about this living bread. They are unsure and no doubt afraid of this living bread that Jesus not only offers, but claims to be. They know he is really Mary and Joseph's kid and wonder where he gets off claiming to be so uppity and magnanimous that he can speak for God. And that, in a nutshell, or perhaps I should say a pastry shell, is our story for today. But when we read this story at staff meeting this week, something jumped out at me. The complaining. Did you catch that? At verse 41, the text says, "Then the Jews began to complain about him." Complain about Jesus. "Because he said, 'I am the bread that came down from heaven.'" And like bread, complaining seems to be fairly ubiquitous as well. Only it doesn't disappear when it snows. If you don't believe me, just take a moment, preferably not now, but take a moment and pop over to your favorite social media site. Litanies of complaints and anguish, scrolling 28:8. But this word jumped out at me, and I became curious about this word that is translated as complaining. This word in Greek, what was it? And what was its relationship to bread? In Greek, this word translated as complaining is egongadzon. Egongadzon. Thank you, Junior. It's a funny word. The rest of you should try laughing when I say it multiple times in the next few paragraphs. Egongadzon, which is a form of the word gongudzo. I liked it because it sounded strange. Gongudzo. It reminded me of that old campy game show from the 70s. You know the one, the Gong Show? It's like, if you don't remember it, it was like the bell-bottom, double-knit leisure suit version of America's Got Talent, only you got a panel of really B-list 70s celebrities that had a mallet in their hand, and if they didn't like the act that was going on stage, they got to hit a gong and march the person off. In fact, that seems possibly to be exactly what's going on here. Jesus is trying to tell the religious faithful about a new way of being in relationship to the God of abundance, the God who will sustain them and the whole world with the bread of life. And their inclination is to pick up their proverbial mallet and gong his act right off the messianic platform. Gongudzo. It's an unusual word. It's used only 8 times, I found out, in the New Testament. Once in Matthew, once in Luke, 4 times in John's Gospel, and 2x in Paul's letter to the Corinthians. If it sounds funny, gongudzo is a word that is known, you know this word, onomatopoeia. It is a word that attempts to sound like a word that it's attempting to imitate. In this case, apparently, gongudzo, or maybe gongudzo, gongudzo, is supposed to be sounding like the cooing of a dove or the low, rumbling growl of an animal. Gongudzo. It's like that sound you hear when you know something is being said, but you're not sure what it is that's being said or who's really saying it. I believe it's what they call in the international intelligence community, chatter. Or what they call in the church, parking lot conversations. And so in staff meeting this week, when we read this text out loud, I laughed because for the first time I heard Jesus telling those complainers, those, and I'm coining a term here, egongazons, I heard him saying, stick a sock in it. Or perhaps, as the British would say, shut your cake hole. Now, maybe you didn't hear that when Nora read the gospel a few minutes ago, because Jesus often says things better than we might want to, or at least Jesus' translators want to make what Jesus says sound nicer than we might want to. And albeit when Jesus says those things in those nice, sophisticated theological ways, sometimes they can be more confusing as well. But did you notice that in response to their complaining, Jesus offered them bread? In response to their complaining, Jesus offered them bread. Perhaps the cake for their cake hole, if you will. What I realized as we read this story together in our small staff community is that you can't complain if you have a mouth full of bread. You can't complain. You have to chew. And I believe that may be what Jesus is offering the Jews, and I believe that is what Jesus is offering us. If we can eat at this table and still go back out into the world and complain and still espouse our own self-centered, self-interested worldviews that do not conform to the will of the one who is the bread of the life of the world, well, then perhaps we need a bigger portion of bread to stifle our gob for a while. This gospel news that we receive each week should be more than enough to keep our hearts and our minds metaphorically masticating for a lifetime. For the bread of the life of the world is not an easily digested morsel. Jesus has come to provide the bread from heaven for the life of the world and provide it in abundance, but he also expects that it is something that will feed us forever. Thusly, there will need to be a great deal of chewing, a great deal of chewing on what Jesus gives us. And when we are chewing, there will not be as much time for bumping our gums toward our own druthers and self-interest. Just perhaps, I'm suggesting Jesus might have had an intention. Just perhaps that is the reason in the Lord's Prayer, the words that immediately follow, "Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread." Something to chew on. Not in our mouths, if you're a literalist. In our hearts, in our minds, in our souls. Give us this day our daily bread. So there it is. No matter what else you have to do this week, no matter what else you're looking forward to this afternoon, the bread is here. You know you want it. It's good. But remember to chew.